welcome to the Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast. This week we are joined by Anne McGloon, who has spoke on the podcast previously. Definitely take a listen to her episodes. Anne, would you mind introducing yourself to the audience just in case they have not listened to your episodes, and just share kind of your experience and what you do?
Absolutely. First of all, I'm just thrilled again to be here and to be chatting with you, because I immensely enjoy it. I have been involved in scent work and search and rescue and gun dog stuff even for, gosh, it seems like a long time. I was thinking about the dates this morning before our call, and I got started in search and rescue in 2005. So it's been quite a long time, and I started training my first dog in 2006. Since that time, I've certified and been out on with five dogs. I've certified five dogs in air scent, wilderness air scent, man trailing, human remains, article search, and we've deployed on, gosh, countless missions throughout Southern Oregon, Northern California, and even up in Washington State. It's my passion. It really is my passion. All forms of scent work. It's just, I don't know, it lights me up.
I love that. Yeah. I was going to say, you're only a little bit passionate about scent work, are you? So in terms of what would you like to share with the audience today?
I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, it has incredible benefits for so many dogs. Granted, I'm working with dogs that are really driven for scent work. But here's the thing. A lot of our dogs are really driven for scent work, especially of those of you out there with any of the gun dog breeds, the terriers, the working breeds that really need a job. They want to be fulfilled. So it triggers something in our dogs. It triggers something called the seeking system. And it helps them build confidence in their environment, helps them learn about their environment. I always use the analogy, kind of, it would be like asking us, who are, you know, we're such visual people, to go through life with blinders on. When we ask our dogs not to sniff, not to do this, not to do that. And that's how they explore the world. That's how they learn about the world. They interact with the world. It's all through their nose. So I want to, you know, whether I'm training a dog for professional work or training a companion dog, I want them all to have the same benefits of scent work. And the other thing about it is it doesn't have to be complicated, right? It doesn't have to be complicated.
Now, for our listeners, sometimes one of the objections to doing any kind of scent training is they worry that they're going to encourage their dog to sniff more and be less focused. Do you have any thoughts on that, Anne?
Yeah, 100%, 180 degrees the other way. So if the thing, we go for a walk with our dog, okay? And our dog immediately, you know, you go out this happens all the time. You walk out the front door with your dog and they're like, whoa, man, the world smells brilliant today. It rained last night and I'm going to sniff every blade of grass. They're going to do it anyways, right? And so we end up, no, don't do this, don't do that. It's really kind of demotivating, and we can go into whose walk is it anyways. But my dog is going to interact and to engage their seeking system, whether I'm party to it or not. So they're going to go self-employed. I want to be part of their world. I want to hunt with them together. And I find, and by hunting together with my dog, whether it's scent work, whether it's gun dog work, whether it's barn hunt, which is a big sport in the United States now, whatever it is, I want to be partnered with my dog and build relationship. If I'm hunting with my dog, they're like, hey, mom, hey, dad, we're going to hunt right now. And they start engaging with us more. And we've also now put it on cue just by the fact that we're doing it together. I can't imagine. I have a little working cocker named Millie, and I can't imagine starting And when I got her, I was going to do, I am doing search and rescue with her, but I was also going to do agility. And I did some agility, but there aren't enough hours in the day to do everything. But I can't imagine having a little spaniel puppy or a lab puppy or, you know, a little terrier or shepherd or something and not introducing them to scent work right away, not being part of their world right away. And so that's what I do.
For dogs that they're bred to do kind of scent work related activities, it's a good outlet for them. It's detrimental that they don't get to take advantage of it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's an inherent need. I think it's a welfare issue, quite honestly. I think they need to do it to feel good about who they are. It's the same with, you know, herding breeds love scent work too, but herding breeds also have other outlets that might fulfill their needs, like tri-ball, which is herding sheep, herding balls instead of sheep. But any outlet we can give our dog that fulfills what they were bred for, I think is super important, and helps fulfill, again, that seeking behavior that they need, I think, to be happy, content dogs. Otherwise, they're going to find something else to do. It might be digging up the backyard. It might be barking. It might be a behavior that is hard to fix, that it's a behavior that we don't really want to see in our dogs. Or, you know, it can be something that starts to look like a compulsive sort of behavior, like light chasing or something. I mean, that could be a dog with a full bucket too, but it could also be a dog that it needs to search. It needs to be mentally engaged.
So for someone that maybe they're thinking, I don't really want to do sports with my dog. I don't want to do competition. I don't want to do anything that's strenuous or that time intensive, because it, you know, what you said earlier, it's not that complicated, but how would you explain that to them to get them kind of,
how do you get started? And scent work for a lot of people is complicated because it's not our world. We're a visual people. So we're like, I don't know how to do this. I'm not a dog, right? I don't have a nose. What am I doing? And then there's a lot of gadgets, but there's a lot of things out there on the market, or they see it on the internet where people have these elaborate scent wheels, elaborate detection walls, and elaborate boxes and all this. You don't need any of it. Okay. It's great for some applications and for some disciplines, but you don't need any of it. All you really need when you're starting is food or a toy, something that your dog loves. And I start all my dogs on a primary, which is food, and a toy, if they're toy motivated, and most of my dogs have pretty much always been, or something that is a food and a toy combined, like a little clam toy. Those are awesome. Even a stuffed Kong. I used to go hide a stuffed Kong for Tolly. He would track me to the hide because I was working on his tracking. So it was beautiful. But it's hide and seek. It can be us, right? It can be hide and seek on a walk. We duck behind a tree and they come find us. Of course, that's building relationship and proximity to us and recall and a whole bunch of other things at the same time too. But it doesn't have to be complicated. Think about when you were a little kid, actually, that's what it is. It's a game, right? And you're hiding things. Where people often go wrong is they assume that because a dog has a nose, that they've already got it covered, that they know how to play the game. And so they make the hides really, really hard for the dog really early. And the dog goes, I don't know how to do this. And it instantly becomes no fun because they've made it too hard. And I teach tracking. And one of the things, or one of the myths, I think it's a myth, that gets floated around in tracking circles a lot is dogs know how to track. They come out of the womb, they know how to track because they can find mom's teeth, right? Well, here's the thing. If you were to dump me in downtown, let's see, I've been to London. So how about Calcutta? If you were to dump me in some big city in India, I would be lost, completely lost, culturally lost, navigationally lost, overwhelmed environmentally. I'm a country girl. I wouldn't get it at all. It would be really hard for me to navigate from point A to point B. I'd have to learn how to do it. I would eventually learn how to do it. Just like if I took someone maybe who's lived in a city their whole life and dumped them in my backwoods, I'd probably be looking for them with my dogs pretty soon because they'd get lost. I can navigate just by terrain and some site navigation and a map. I don't, you know, really need a GPS. I take one for safety, but I know how to navigate the woods. I'm much better at that than I am the big city. I have my map, my little YouTube, you know, my little tube thing out. It's hard. It's the same thing with our dogs. Yeah, they know how to walk, but they have to learn how to navigate. So they have to learn how to get to point A to point B if they're tracking. They have to learn how scent moves through the environment to find their hide. The other thing is, and I call it over, under, through games. And for those of you like that are in the games club or they're familiar with some of the games that we like to play here, think of like kind of cardboard chaos on steroids. So one of the foundational things I do with all my puppies is they learn about surfaces. They learn about walking over pallets. They learn about walking over steel grates. They learn all about that stuff really slowly, really simply by hiding food. They learn about wobbly surfaces, climbing over, climbing under, climbing through. They have to learn how to do that and gain confidence how to do that and go, wow, and I found my toy at the same time, or wow, I found my cookie at the same time. The other mistake people make is they put the hide elevated usually, which I don't do till very later in their career, but they stick it up somewhere and the dog's like, it's up there, but I got to walk on a slippery, unstable, scary surface. I'm out of here. Right?
Right.
So go slow. Keep it fun. Lots of wins. There's a, if my dog, one of the things I mentioned to my students is if my dog ever looks at me for guidance, I've gone too fast.
So just real quick, I want to track back just a second to, you know, we're talking about tactile introducing to all these different surfaces and everything. Do you ever find that by doing that, by building that confidence, that they tend to maybe become a bit of a goat in the house? And because sometimes you find people, they're like, if I introduce the concept of being able to be confident on these things, they might jump on my counters.
So not really. Again, it's on cue because I like to have a good release sequence for my dog. So if I use middle. It can be heel for gun dog work. A lot of times I'm doing a lot of things in heel position because I want my dog in heel position. That position becomes really valuable because they know they're going to get released to an environmental reinforcer. Same with searching. It's an environmental kind of reinforcer. So no, because I have the whole sequence, the whole chain, the whole loop kind of on cue. What I do find people doing, however, is just the opposite. They put the hide, say, behind the couch cushions, the toy, the stuffed toy, and then they wonder why their dog won't go find it, even though the dog knows where it is. And they've seen the changes of behavior in their dog that, oh, my dog's got scent. He knows it. Why isn't he going up to the couch? Because from a very young age, that dog has been taught to not jump on the couch. So it won't go up and get the hide. So I've actually seen the opposite happen, where by limiting what we're allowing them to do, limits their, I don't want to do it wrong. I don't want to make the wrong choice. No, I just won't go get it. So Millie's the first dog I've ever owned that can actually jump on the counters. All my other dogs have been Sussex Spaniels and they can reach, but 50 pounds of dog jumping on a counter isn't really going to happen. They learn to pull out chairs and do it that way. So Millie's the first dog I've ever had to jump on a counter, and has nothing to do with scent work. right? So unless I'm doing scent work with her, she doesn't freely jump on counters.
Right. So because
it's on cue. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. So for those listening, who may not know a lot about scent work, could you describe what that looks like in terms of when you're working with your dog? I think a big component of scent work, from my experience is learning the body language of your dog, and learning to communicate with your dog really nicely. And you were just talking about them finding odor. What does that look like for those that aren't familiar with scent work?
Yeah. So, if we're talking like detection here, which I think most people are more familiar with than tracking. So that's another topic maybe for another day. So when I place a high, the first thing I want to do, if I want to teach my dog detection, which is essentially air scenting. So the odor is floating on air currents, right? A good way to think about it is like we're approaching winter here in the United States. So it's almost burn season. We've had enough rain. I go watch burn piles burn or clouds move. Fog moving is another one. And you can see the air currents. If you fish, water currents, it's all similar. It's fluid dynamics. And so you can see and you can say, okay, that's scent moving through the environment. So you can, for us, remember we're visual. We need to visually see it. But what our dogs will do is they'll give what we call a change of behavior. Now, here's a clue. Dogs give change of behaviors on lots of things, novel odors, novelty. Woo, head goes up. It's like a boom, change of behavior. You know where your hide is, you can be more certain that that's what the change of behavior is on. But you're going to see the body change. I film everything. I video my work so I can study it. And you're going to see it. And I want to, when I see that, I want to then just really watch my dog to see how they source the hide. What we then assume, especially if we can see it, is we then assume, why doesn't my dog just go right to it? Well, maybe the wind's blowing the odor in the other direction. And particularly spaniels, they do something what I call they chase odor. So they will chase kind of odor and then flip back into it, into that scent cone, which I really hate that term, but into that scent and then source it. So you will see them veer away and you're going, why is my dog doing that? Let them work it out. Let them figure it out. Or they go behind it because the scent's blowing that way and they have to go behind it and come into it. Then as you know, if it's primary and it's toy or food, get it. It's theirs. They win. Those of you that are doing actually hiding, you know, an essential oil or a piece of Kong or something like that, you've probably formalized some kind of communication with your dog that they have to communicate to you that they have found it. This is another area that goes wrong a lot because we change criteria on the dog. They've communicated, we don't see it, we tell them, show me. And it's like, well, that's a confidence killer because I've already told you, mom or dad. So we have to know exactly what that looks like. And one thing I do, and maybe I'm old school, I don't know. But when my dog, every time I do a search, particularly if it's complex, until it becomes a reflexive habit, my dog has a down indication. The stare is like popular now. It's not for every dog. Dogs that suffer with stillness, perhaps, that need to move, maybe not a stare isn't maybe the best response, but it's popular right now. So I'll just leave it there. But my dog does a down. So her cue for the down is nose on that source. So when she gets as close as she physically can to source, the source actually cues the behavioral response, which is the down. But until it's reflexive, I don't want any junk in my chain, in my search loop. So I follow something called mind the gap. So when that nose is on source, until it's fluid, until it's reflexive, down. I cue down. just cue it. Don't leave your dog hanging going, I just did a 3-minute search. My brain is fried. What was I supposed to do? Let them tell them what they were supposed to do. Down, sit, bark, whatever, until it becomes reflexive. Don't let junk get in the gap. Mind the gap. Don't let crap get in there. Just cue it. It will become reflexive. And don't worry about your cueing it. Think of it as new cue, old cue. New cue is your odor. Old cue is your verbal. Simple. Keep it simple.
And I think sometimes it's so easy to, you know, 2 minutes in, 3 minutes into a search, a dog is working incredibly hard. That's actually a lengthy time. Right.
That is a very long time. I know a lot of folks in the professional world, like that are training explosive detection dogs, they're looking for 7 to 10 minutes of intense high sniffing frequency nose time. They're looking for minute amounts of odor, a really low odor threshold. Essential oil, it's stinky. That's really stinky. So, you know, your dog might be finding something in 10 seconds, 15 seconds. So if your dog is then pushed to 2 minutes, that's a long time of focus. That's a long time of concentration. It's sort of like, I was terrible at math. So that's why I thought of once becoming a meteorologist, but I was terrible at math and I learned you had to learn calculus. And so I changed my whole focus of my life. That's all it takes, right? I didn't have a lot of patience there. So it would be like going from a simple algebra to calculus. Think of the focus that takes, right? And it's the same with our dogs. And you finally get to the end and you're kind of mentally fried. And that's what happens a lot of times. The dog is tired. They just simply forget what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. So I think one of the things is, I guess, a benefit of knowing and having this information for those that are listening, that are intrigued by introducing their dog to scent, is that it's such an excellent outlet. It actually is very tiring, even though it doesn't look tiring. It is exhausting. And so, it's exhausting in such a mentally fulfilling way and physically fulfilling way. Right?
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. So if you have winter's coming, you're going to have a lot of rainy days and you might have a dog that, you know, going for a walk might not be suitable for them that day. They might be injured. They might not be feeling well. It might just fill their bucket. Scent work, man, play some scent work during the day and you're mentally exhausting them. They're still getting fulfilled. You don't need the walk. Here's the thing. I don't walk my dogs. Now, granted, I live on property, so I can walk them in my yard, so to speak. But I don't just take my dogs on walks unless it's a purposeful walk. So there you go. Just saying that.
And they live very fulfilled lives.
Very fulfilled, very happy lives, right? Yes. Yes.
So, Anne, let's go ahead and in terms of if someone was interested in scent work, and again, I think at the beginning of this, we touch base on and you touch base on that it's not as complex as it can sometimes seem. Why should people get involved with scent work with their dogs?
Well, for the one thing we've talked about is it does fulfill a need. It builds confidence. It's all of those good things. The other thing that we haven't touched on, but I do want to mention because it's really important, you touched on it when you asked me that question about what it looks like, is we begin to enter their world. So we start to understand how they're interpreting the world. We start to observe them interact with the environment from a scent perspective, which is how they're interacting with the environment. So because we have to watch them when we're doing scent work, we're belly button to the dog, so to speak. And we're observing, we're videoing, and we go, wow, look at that head flick or look at that head movement. So when we're out, I do this when I'm out hiking, it's a purposeful hike with my dogs, or in my yard walking around. And I see a head go up. I had this the other day. I saw a head go up with Tolly, my Sussex, and he stared out through the fence into the woods. And I went, what the hell? What is he looking at? What does he smell? You know, what is he looking at? So I look, and there was a beautiful, beautiful buck just standing there quietly. I never would have seen it if I hadn't been paying attention to my dog, because they're telling us stuff all the time. And it can be from a distance, it can be close in, but they're telling us about our environment often before we encounter it. So when I'm out hiking with my dogs and I notice something strange, I start paying attention, because in the woods where I live, things can eat you. So I start paying attention to that sort of thing. I have to tell you this funny thing. I've never done it. I'm going to do it someday. Maybe this winter I'll do it. So I do hike with my dogs. I don't walk them, but I do hike with them for a number of reasons. But I always thought it would be cool. Like when I see that head go up, and I see that change of behavior, I thought it would be cool to have two signals, two paddles with signals, maybe an X and an O. And one would signify a cougar, a mountain lion, and one would be a bear. And when Millie or Tolly's head goes, oh, I smell something out there, I could put my paddles up and she could tell me what it was. But then I thought, I don't really want to know.
I wouldn't want to know either.
Yeah.
So in terms of, I mean, this is, I could listen to you talk about this all day, to be honest. I think there's a lot of takeaways for anyone listening today. And it is always a pleasure speaking with you every single time. And of course, I'm sure we will hear from you again, because I know that our listeners loved every single episode that you've offered and done.
I was just going to say thank you so much. I just love it.
All right. For everyone listening, that was a Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast episode with Anne McGloon. Stay tuned for the next episode.